It's a real pleasure to welcome Karan Soni. He has many titles, Class A PGA Professional, Golf Pro. He's also a certified sports nutritionist, and holistic nutrition is also what he's certified in. Hello and welcome to the show, Karan.
Good afternoon. How are you, Susan?
I'm very well. How are you? You've just come in from LA.
Oh, it was fantastic. 74 degrees. It was beautiful. You know, it was absolutely gorgeous. Great energy, good people. And yeah, you know, so I got back and trying to get used to, obviously, this weather, which is, to me, since growing up in Dubai, I've always really enjoyed the heat. So I kind of like it right now.
You thrive off the heat,
do
you?
I do. Yeah. I do, right. Yeah. So
just with LA, because obviously we talk about, I have a food show as well as the health show, and California is always a place that is really interesting with what they're doing when it comes to wellness, but also food as well. So what was grabbing you there?
It's fantastic, because I think, you know, at the birthplace of nutrition and health and fads did also get, you know, it took place in California, especially LA. So my brother stays in one side, and I'll give you a beautiful example. So he stays in a side which is called Manhattan Beach. Now, in Manhattan Beach, people are very sort of on the borderline of being veganism, you know, so they're very anti, oh my God, you should not even have eggs, you know. So there's like a particular camp which says, you know, they're relying on a lot of corn, a lot of beans as their protein source. They're very anti-carbohydrates as well, so they're sort of limiting a lot of different foods. Now, when I was going to like Venice Beach, which is like Muscle Beach, and a lot of athletes actually are based over there, their diet was based on a lot of intermittent fasting, sort of a protocol, you know, where they were obviously fasting throughout the day so that they could binge and eat at nighttime. You know, and theirs was based a lot on like if it fits your macros, whether it's your carbs, your fat, your fiber, your protein. I went up a little bit more ahead, and those people were actually based on a lot of gluten-free diets. Regardless of them having celiac disease or not, they thought, you know, gluten-free is the way to go because I just don't digest it. So it's just sort of interesting to see like a different sphere. You know,
I love
you
the idea that there's a different beach for different.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? You know, and each one
it's
has
tribes.
Such a
yeah.
Right. You have people who are very, you know, let's pro coconut oil, and now there's so much research out that if you do have too much of it, it is going to boost up bad cholesterol. But it's been marketed and told that, you know, it's really good for you. So now people are just celebrating on it. You know, so I think there's a lot of different sort of recognizing on what is good for you and what's not. Ingredients are unbelievable in the U.S. You know, I think California, because they do create so many different things, they sometimes are single-handedly responsible for creating metabolic damage for people, and at the same time also helping reverse dieting, you know? And I think because there's so much information out there right now, and being in this field of nutrition, the ADA only now in 2017 has changed the food guide pyramid since 1976. So that means for that many years, we've been telling each other that we should eat a certain way, but in actuality, it's completely shifted. You know? So the entire myth of, you know, we should have X amount of protein in a day. Well, if we take a look at the research, our body does not digest and use protein for energy. Our body is very efficient when it comes to glucose. So when someone says, I'm on a low-carb, no-carb diet, so you're not understanding what our evolution created it. You know, so when we were obviously on the planet Earth, we were hunters and gatherers throughout the daytime so that we could feast at nighttime. Not so that we can get used to having a soup and salad. How does that make any sense? So you wake up and you're starving? How does that work? You know, so...
Well, you help people with their food choices, and you love food and you love ingredients. But you've had your own personal challenges as well, health-wise, and we're going to be hearing your story. But you mentioned there the fad diet. I was talking to someone the other day who says, I'm following the Atkins. And I was like, the Atkins? I remember the Atkins from sort of 10 years ago, high protein. Yeah. And there was a bit of controversy around the Atkins, very high protein, but seemed to get short-term results, you know, weight loss quite quickly, but whether it was sustainable, I don't know. Apparently, there's a new version of the Atkins. So this is, you know, interesting. I'm looking here at a grapefruit a day. That was way back in the 1930s. I think even later than that, you know, I seem to remember my mum trying that one where you have a grapefruit in the morning, and that's going to kickstart your metabolism, apparently, and help you lose weight.
Or the cabbage soup diet.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
That's practical. How livable is that, you know? So I think a lot of the times most people actually they fall into these camps, and I've obviously, you know, being in this field, I have probably tried over 10, 11 different type of protocols, you know. So I tried a potato diet, which is nothing but just eating potatoes all day. Did I gain weight? Absolutely not. Was it boring? Oh my God, yeah. But I was eating 2 kilos of potatoes every single day. you know? So do certain diets, do they have a place? Sure they do, but is it something that you can sustain for the rest of your life? A lot of people, we're very impatient, right? So we want to see fast, quick results. And unfortunately for weight loss, if you do it too fast, it's not going to stay that long. You know, so there's like a catch 22. We've always been told that, you know, calories are not important. However, it's like saying energy is not important. If we obviously consume more calories than we burn, we're going to obviously gain weight. That's a reality of it. So what do people do? Well, I'm going to work out more. I'm going to join a gym class more. Okay, cool, that works. But can you do that all the time? You know, what happens if you go for a wedding or you're in a social occasion or you have a date? Then what happens? You know, oh my God, it didn't work out. So that means I can't have this.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
And I think actually it's really interesting to know the people that have changed their way of eating and have sustained it and it's worked for them. Brigitte's saying, I followed a raw food diet and I wish I could do it again. Well, I guess that begs the question, why aren't you? But as many people will know that follow the show, I was in Bali earlier this year, and really you'll hear more of that story this coming Thursday, but following the sort of vegan story there with some amazing restaurants, and as with Chef Athena from Supernatural Kitchen here in Dubai, what are your thoughts on the raw food diet?
I wish I could tell you that I've tried it. It just didn't digest with me, just because it takes such a long time for raw food to actually get ingested and actually metabolize and get used. So I've tried it and I didn't feel good. You know, I felt very bloated. I felt very constipated. I tried the vegan diet as well. Now, unfortunately, I do know that corn, peas, carrots, beets, beans, for me and for most people, it causes a feeling of satiety, but also feeling very bloated. So for me, I didn't really enjoy being vegan, you know, so...
So it's about knowing your body then, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. If someone looks at my diet, and obviously I do have multiple sclerosis, so I have to be a little more accountable. My diet when I was growing up, I used to be 110 kilos as well. So I've gone through this junction.
That was when you were a child, right? You were
about, right, but at the age of 17, you know, I wanted to make sure that I needed to change my life. I needed to, you know, look a certain way, because vanity does last sometimes, especially if you want it when you're young. So I lost weight, but my diet then changed dramatically. Obviously, when I got to college, after I graduated from college, once I started playing professional golf, it changed. Once I obviously got diagnosed, it changed. My diet continuously changes every 2 months. Human body is very smart. You give it something for too long, it sustains itself. Now, if you want to see constant results or constant energy, or let's just say you want to fit your lifestyle to it, your diet has to continuously change. So what worked 2 months ago is not going to work now. And if someone sees, you know, my diet as well, and they say, you know, what do you eat in a day? I eat a lot of carbs, you know, and they're just like, what? How are you eating carbs? I'm just like, well, my diet consists of 65%, 70% of its calories coming from carbohydrates.
Well, and people are texting in, interestingly, when you say that. One here from Nora, eating real natural foods, no sugar most of the time, 80%, leaving treats for the occasional outings and family gatherings, 20% eating only when hungry, and tapering my carbohydrates. We're scared of carbohydrates. Many people worry,
right?
Don't they?
Yeah, yeah. See, the way that carbs actually do work, right? So the reason why I'm kind of a fan of one protocol, which everyone says that it's a fad, like intermittent fasting, right? My first meal generally is only like 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. Not because I'm trying to intermittent fast, but if people see what I really eat at nighttime and what most of my clients eat at nighttime is predominantly only carbs. The way that carbohydrates work, and essentially glucose, they convert into energy for the next day. If you have it too early, it's going to spike up your insulin, make you bounce up and down. So you'll constantly be hungry, and then you'll drop into energy, and then you'll need another spike. So if carbs are actually had at a specific timing, which is based on circadian rhythm, which is between 3 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, generally, we all feel a little bit hazy in the eyes. We feel a little bit tired. That's a time that our body is more receptive to using carbs for energy. And that's one of the things that I think most people don't understand. We've all been told that you should wake up in the morning and have a big breakfast. So we'll just have all of our carbs then. Bread, oats, pancakes, whatever it is, right? So that means that every single moment of the day, you'll constantly be going up and down in energy. You'll need a great big breakfast. You'll be hungry in about 2 hours. You'll need another spike, so you'll have more carbs. Lunchtime could be a little bit of carbs. And then you will say, oh my God, I'm not going to have any carbs after a time of six. that's not practical. That's really not livable. And you're just affecting a lot of immune system conditions. Your hormones are going to get affected. Your sleeping is going to get very irregular. You know, so I think there's so much research and evidence which has been out, especially in the last 7 years in nutrition, which is starting to get people a better relationship with food.
Well, we're going to find out more about this. This is really interesting. And you're clearly so acutely aware, not only because of your own condition, you have multiple sclerosis. You call yourself a survivor of multiple sclerosis, MS. So we'll be finding out why you define yourself in that way and getting that diagnosis, being a professional golfer and how you've changed your life or not, as the case may be. Karen Soney, that's who I'm talking to. Check out him online, Aesthetic Lifestyles. He helps people with their lifestyle and their food and nutrition, and lots of questions coming in as well. Talking to Karan Soni, who is a certified sports nutritionist and holistic nutrition expert. He has his website aestheticlifestyles.com, and he loves food. He makes food, he creates menus, he helps people and assists them in their food choices. So do send your questions through for Karan. And when we're talking about fad diets, I wanted to share this with you and get your thoughts on it, Karan. So we've been looking at the history and the culture of what we call fad diets. Now, marketing has played an important role, of course, in the evolution of the fad diet. So we're going to hear now about the importance of advertising in the promotion of a fad diet, and also where this trend actually stems from. Have a listen to this.
Conventional wisdom about diets, including government health recommendations, seems to change all the time. And yet ads routinely come about claiming to have the answer about what we should eat. So how do we distinguish what's actually healthy from what advertisers just want us to believe is good for us? Marketing takes advantage of the desire to drop weight fast and be stronger, slimmer, and brighter. And in the big picture, diet plans promising dramatic results, known as fad diets, are just what they seem, too good to be true. So where do diet fads even come from? While the ancient Greeks and Romans rallied behind large-scale health regimens centuries earlier, this phenomenon began in earnest in the Victorian era with crazes like the vinegar diet and the banting diet. Since then, diets have advised us all sorts of things: to excessively chew, to not chew at all, to swallow a grapefruit per meal, nonstop cabbage soup, even consumption of arsenic or tapeworms.
Goodness me, imagine that. But what I did find interesting there, Karan, was the mention of the vinegar diet, and something that's come into the forefront now, not as to just only take it, but as a good, healthy agent for some people, is your apple cider vinegar.
Right. So this amazing marketing of we should make ourselves alkaline. Our body is always alkaline. It's always in an alkaline state, which means that we're always able to regulate our pH levels. And most people actually go through this thing saying that, oh my God, I'm having 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar before each meal. That's going to make me lose a lot of weight. Well, if you just have lemon water, it's probably going to do the same thing. You know?
Yeah, okay. I suppose it's right. Yeah, alkaline, it's alkalining the body, and that's the main purpose for it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Gut health, we talk a lot about that on the show.
Most important. I think one of the best things that I remember that I still actually eat this a lot. I like sauerkraut, I like fermented products. That actually helps with a lot of gut health. So even vegetables like asparagus, bok choy, they're unbelievably super powerful for, you know, regulating your gut. You know?
Well, let's hear a bit more. This we're just hearing there, and it was Mia Nakmuli giving the take from the TED Talk on fad diets. Let's have a listen to a bit more on the diet with Mia, and he examines if fad diets can actually work, and we'll see what you think.
If the idea of diet crazes has withstood history, could this mean that they work? In the short term, the answer is often yes. Low-carbohydrate plans, like the popular Atkins or South Beach diets, have an initial diuretic effect. Sodium is lost until the body can balance itself out, and temporary fluid weight loss may occur. With other high-protein diets, you might lose weight at first, since by restricting your food choices, you are dropping your overall calorie intake. But your body then lowers its metabolic rate to adjust to the shift, lessening the diet's effect over time and resulting in a quick reversal if the diet is abandoned. So while these diets may be alluring early on, they don't guarantee long-term benefits for your health and weight.
So kind of agreeing with what you were saying earlier, Karan. So how do you spot if a diet is a fad? Here's what Mia has to say, sharing some tips as well.
Here's the first tip off. If a diet focuses on intensely cutting back calories or on cutting out entire food groups like fat, sugar, or carbohydrates, chances are it's a fad diet. And another red flag is ritual. When the diet in question instructs you to only eat specific foods, prescribed combinations, or to opt for particular food substitutes like drinks, bars, or powders. The truth is, shedding pounds in the long run simply doesn't have a quick fix solution.
So what do you say, Karan?
Oh, wow. I love it. I absolutely love it. I completely agree with it as well. Most of my diets, especially like what I do and for most of my clients, it relies solely actually on carbohydrates. A very, very minimum amount, because I think with the research actually being out there, we've all been told that we should have 1 gram per pound of body weight for protein. In actuality, the research has been out that women should not have more than 30 to 40 grams of protein in a day. A man cannot digest more than 70 grams of protein in a day. So the excess protein is obviously going to spike up our insulin, get into our sugar, and obviously it's going to help either promote more fat, and it's not going to help us build more muscle. You know, we're not bodybuilders. We're not taking a lot of supplements. It's not livable. It's not sustainable. Protein shakes, I mean, they went through, and obviously the marketing campaigns, right? So in nutrition, what worked in, you should have whey protein, you should have an isolate. That's so confusing. Why? How reliable is that? You know, so now you have to carry things with you everywhere you go.
And it,
so,
but it kind of looks cool, and there's, you know, and then again, you know, it's almost tribal. You start to see other people, and then you're having that. And I've drank them and enjoyed them, and you think it's all got good ingredients in there, so it's got to be doing some good for you. But if that's what you're kind of pinning your nutritional intake on a daily basis, then you've got to be careful.
You have to. You know, when some people actually say, you know, I'm eating clean. You know, the real definition of clean eating is? So I'll give you an example. So when I actually eat one food group, let's say I'm eating carbs, right? So if I'm eating rice, I can't mix any gravy. I can't mix any vegetable. I'm only eating just rice. That's the definition of clean eating. You know, if I'm eating potatoes, then it's only potatoes. There's no butter, there's no olive oil, there's no spices, there's nothing. That is real clean eating. If you take a look at a lot of ingredients that are in the grocery store, and two things which I've really, really sort of re-highlighted, even when I was in the States this time recently, we all know how bad cornstarch, corn syrup is for us. Do you know that in any single chocolate that you look at in a grocery store, there's only two which do not have it? A Kit Kat and a Reese's peanut butter cup. Every single other one is got cornstarch or corn syrup. If you take a look at cookies or baked products, they all have it. They're also called maize, which is also not good for us, you know. Wheat is something which is detrimental for us, you know, but if you take a look at also a lot of ingredients which are in a lot of products, it contains wheat.
Is it detrimental to all of us?
You know, wheat belly is something which is pretty significant. But if you have white flour, which has been told that it's so bad for us, it digests better. People say brown rice, white rice. So there's 1 gram of fiber difference. There's a feeling of satiety with brown rice because of that 1 gram of fiber. But if I take a look at just the general calories, a cup of brown rice has got more calories than a cup of white rice. One makes me feel more bloated. One actually gets digested very, very fast and gets used immediately for energy, which is obviously white. Potato and a sweet potato. You know, we've been all told that, you know what, sweet potato is so much better. Sure, it can be, but is it always available? You know, so you have to also pick a diet which is something which is always there. It's always in front of you. Can you get to it? You know, sweet potato obviously has higher calories than a regular russet potato.
And I don't think people realize that.
No, not at all.
They think sweet potato is the healthier option.
Right. And you know, when someone says olive oil, now I'm Indian, right? So my evolution for Indian, I never grew up with olive oil. So me using olive oil as a fat, even for me as my ancestors, does not work. Butter works. Why? Because I grew up with it. I grew up eating bread all my life. So white bread reacts well with me. So I think for people to have a better understanding and a more sort of a calming effect, look at how you were raised. How was your mother raised? How was your grandmother raised? What were the foods that worked for them then? Chances are your carbs will probably be associated with that. If I start eating, I'll give you an example, a lot of pasta. Well, I'm not Italian. I'm not from Europe. So pasta will have a hard time digesting with me. But things which do are things like either bread or potatoes or white rice. Those digest with me. Protein choices. Obviously, you know, I'm Hindu, so we were not raised by eating a lot of beef. So that doesn't work. You know, not only because of religious reasons, but just for general metabolism, it does not really work.
So what do you think? Let me know on 4001. Lots of people texting in questions and comments. So we're going to share those when we come back. And also talk about food as medicine. Now, Karan has multiple sclerosis. We're going to hear about that diagnosis, which came to him at the age of 25. And he was a very active person. He was a professional golfer. How you don't take any medication?
I do not.
You don't take any medication now.
Only thing which I'm really having I'm trying to be very conscious about is the fact that I do need to have some vitamin D.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of it. But I spend so much time in the sun right now, Susan, that I think I'm getting as much natural vitamin D that I can.
So you really looked at your lifestyle, your food when you got that diagnosis. We'll hear about that when we come back. And actually someone's texting in saying, what's your diet coping with MS? Any suggestions for others with MS? So we'll address that and more in a few moments. You just said something then, Karan, which I really like, which is your diet needs to fit your lifestyle and understanding that. And everybody's different. A few people have texted in saying, like one here, listen to your body, eat moderately, enjoy your meal. Somebody else is saying, you know, we're all different, so understand your body type. All of those things are right, but sometimes we're eating too much, sometimes we're not eating enough. It can be complex, but you can simplify it, like you've just been saying. You know, where do you come from? What's your food culture? How much processed food are you eating? How active are you or not? All of these things contribute. But I want to talk about you. Let's talk about your story. Really interesting. So tell me about your diagnosis.
Sure. When I was, I graduated from college, and I always knew that I wanted to play professional golf. So when I got my PGA card, I was sort of on the journey of, you know what, I'm going to compete, I'm going to play. I obviously grew up in Dubai since I was 2 years old, and my parents were here, so I wanted to get ready and probably compete in the Desert Classic. And it was about 2 months before the actual tournament. I was on the driving range, and I collapsed. You know, I was shaking, I was trembling, I couldn't actually even get back into the car to drive properly. So I went back home, I was staying with mom and dad at the time, and I'm just like, Mom, there's something wrong. And she's just like, listen, you're probably just stressed out. You know, you have a tournament coming up, this is your home course, maybe it's something like that. And I was like, okay. So I went back the next day, and I couldn't hold the club. I was shaking even more, and my eyes were sort of giving out. I was not going to blackouts, but my eyes were just going off and on. So we went to the neurospinal specialist here. We went through different doctors over here. They did, obviously, the MRI, and they said, listen, we think, and we're not sure, so they did a spinal tap, which is by far the most painful thing I've ever felt in my entire life.
And you're 25?
I was 25, yeah. When I saw, like, you know, this suitcase-looking thing which has an injection, and they're just like, we're going to drain out your plasma, and then we're going to send it to the UK to see if it's really there. And they diagnosed me as a severe case of multiple sclerosis, where all my lesions were very effective. Now, I didn't know anything about MS. I had no clue. Back in the day, research was not as, you know, evident as it is now. Now, if you want to learn to be a doctor, you can Google, how do I become a doctor? You know, and so you can understand a lot more things. So back then, there was nothing really understanding apart from, okay, I'm going to have something for the rest of my life. I don't know what's going on in my body, but I need to take interferons. I need to be on steroids. I need to take this medication. I wasn't feeling any better, you know, and being an athlete, you're not used to someone telling you can't do something. You're going to figure it out. So I needed to figure it out. And I knew that, you know, if I need to rely on something which there's no cure to it, I can get over that.
Just to clarify, MS, it happens when your immune system attacks what it's saying here, fatty material called myelin, which wraps around your nerve fibers to protect them. Without this outer shell, your nerves become damaged and scar tissue may form. So for those aware of MS, you know, you might see people that are walking with sticks or even in a wheelchair. It depends. It's a progressive disease, and it can be quite fast or it can be quite slow in that progression. Some people can live with MS for years and they're mobile, but they might suffer a lot of fatigue, they might have, you know, some pain, they might even suffer from depression. So am I getting it right?
That's you absolutely are. I think I went through that phase of depressed because you don't know what's going on with your body. you know.
And especially being so active like you were.
You have no clue. So, you know, when the doctor said that, because my father and mother, you know, and God bless, man, you know, a dad is does not used to men in general. I think maybe it's ego-driven or whatever it is, but we're not used to not being able to figure something out. With something like MS, you can't figure it out because you have no idea what caused it, you know. Some people say, okay, it's a lot of heat. You know, some people say it's lack of sleep. Some people say it's stress. I think stress is just a, you know, it's just wrong in all accord, you know. So obviously that causes even more problems. Now, back in the day, I remember when I woke up in the morning, my medication was, I mean, it was like 30 different pills. It was taking interferons. And these are some hardcore medication. I wasn't feeling any better. I was feeling worse. That's what sort of led me to nutrition. I knew that, you know, this is not my life. I'm not waking up. I'm not taking this. There's no cure to it. So I did the most immature thing you possibly could. I left Dubai. I had my laptop. I did distance education for like 4 years of a degree for sports nutrition, holistic nutrition. And during that time, I started experimenting on food myself. Every single protein, every single fat, every single fiber, every single carbohydrate, I had to combine them independently to understand my body. How do I wake up? How do I sleep? Do I have constipation? Do I have energy? Is it long-lasting energy? Is it small spurts? What's going on? You know, that took me a while. It took me about 2 years of experimenting just on myself on what food works for me.
You know, and what sort of changes were you seeing at that time then? Just that, your energy levels, how you're digesting the food, and what you're enjoying as well.
Kind of. You know, and back in the day, I knew that my main purpose was I could give up and sacrifice on taste. I just wanted to be able to walk around more. You know, I wanted to actually be able to feel active again.
Had that noticeably changed that you weren't as active and able?
Oh, right away. I mean, it woke up, you know, for someone who doesn't have MS, when we wake up in the morning, it feels as though they're like 10 trucks which have just gone over us. We're in constant pain. And no, it does not help just getting a lot of massages because it's a very, very different type of pain that you don't even understand, you know, what's going on. I used to get blackouts, and that was very scary. You know, when you don't know if you're dreaming or if you're asleep, and you wake up in the middle of the night, and you're just like, why can't I see for like a period of 2 to 3 minutes? That's frightening. That's very frightening.
If you're an MS sufferer and you're listening to this, you must always go and see your doctor, your specialist, your consultant. We are not going to be advocating that you come off your meds and start taking certain foods as medicine. But in Karan's case, and it's your story, you own it, Karan, tell me what happened to you in the sense of where you're at now and the diet that you follow, the fact that you had 30 different medications and you don't take any of them anymore.
No. Not at all. I listen, and I agree with what you said. You know, I think anyone who does have an autoimmune, do not just stop your medication. I was young. I was immature. I did not want to rely and think about something that I could not fix, you know. So nutrition was, that's been my savior. That's been my help. But, you know, my diet back then, if I ate the same thing that after I got diagnosed with MS, which made me feel better then, if I eat it now, I wouldn't feel as good. You know, so my diet over then was predominantly, I was using egg whites as my protein source. I was having vegetables. I was using apples as my main carbohydrate source. I really was not eating too much bread. I wasn't eating any rice. I wasn't eating any potatoes. My fat intake was fairly low back then. If I look at my diet today, I think my protein is maybe about, I want to say maybe one chicken breast at most. But it's close to about 12 to 14 pieces of Arabic bread sometimes with peanut butter because that fat gets digested with me very, very well. I eat a lot of potatoes, you know, and if I'm eating potatoes, it's close to 700 grams to a kilo of potatoes every night. What's my fat source? Well, if it's sweet potato, I'm using peanut butter. If it's regular potato, I'm using butter. Butter is better for me, you know, that works. Olive oil and ghee, not so much. So if I take a look at my diet now, and I'm fairly active, you know, I wake up fairly early. Do I go to the gym? I do, but mine is basically like yoga. I want something relaxing. I want to concentrate on my breathing. Like I mentioned to you, I mean, I spend close to about 6 to 8 hours sometimes on a golf course every single day.
You were saying that you respond well in warmer climates, so hence you can go out on the golf course and you're thriving on that, whereas someone else would just completely deflate and not be able to have any energy.
Which goes against everything that someone who's got MS is told not to do. You know, you need to stay away from a lot of heat. Well, our body is very heated, there's no doubt. So for me, I started going through the idea of, I'm just going to take out a lot of heaty foods, you know? Maybe that'll help, and that actually has worked for me a lot.
So sort of like chili, hot spices,
absolutely,
that kind of heated food, you mean, yeah.
I'm Indian, right? So Indian food is very unique. We don't just have one spice in a dish. We have 15 combinations of masalas, which are in one. For me, inevitably, three or four of them are going to make me feel really bad, you know? So I'll feel acidic, I'll get a headache, I'll get a migraine. I will just feel fatigued right away. And it could be very healthy food, but because of the different combination of spices, it just won't react with my body. My diet is simplistic to boring. You know, so if someone actually says, oh my God, but you eat the same thing every day, yeah, but I enjoy it.
It works for you.
It does, yeah.
You're feeling, I mean, you look energized to me. Your eyes are bright. You're lean. You know, there's like, you look, I mean, I wouldn't know that you had an MS looking at you. But you're obviously very measured and you're very aware of what you're eating and how you're living. You said about the vitamin D, it's really important. You're getting that if you're on the golf course for 6 or 8 hours.
But I think that is something that, you know, we are all, as human beings, there are two vitamins that we're all always going to be deficient with. One of them is vitamin D and the other one is vitamin B. If you go to any time you go for like a test, those are the two common things that a doctor will say, you know, I'm going to put you on vitamin B supplements, I'm going to put you on vitamin D. Those are the two things that I think that we should actually get used to probably taking, you know, because unfortunately we cannot produce that much of it.
I was reading actually just the other day about, you know, and we've talked about it a bit before on the show, but I was really interested in, I've increased my supplementation over the last few months. Then I was reading about how you don't need to take so many supplements and vitamin C. And I'm not advocating that everyone's, you've got to do your own due diligence on this. But in this particular research, it was saying you don't need to take a daily vitamin C. You should be getting that from your food.
Agreed.
They did say you should take vitamin D.
Yeah.
And again, be tested and figure out for yourself. You might, your vitamin D levels might be absolutely fine. But we do know there is a deficiency here in a lot of people here in the UAE.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the one thing to also note that even if you are taking vitamins, even like I'm, you know, if I take vitamin D, I need to stop after 6 months because my body, if it produces too much of something, is also not good. So it's like a catch 22, right? Oh, I'm deficient in something, I'm going to take it, but we should all realize to cycle off any medication after 6 months, especially with things like vitamins, you know.
Lots of people texting in. We're going to share your thoughts, your questions. Keep them coming in. Thanks to Joanne, who says, I am gripped. This is so interesting. Thank you for such an interesting hour. Well, you're absolutely welcome, and it's not over yet. Stay with us. Jisan saying, your story of MS is amazing. It's really scary what you must have gone through. You've come off all your meds. You don't have any medication for your condition. You believe in food as medicine, and you've clearly been so acutely aware and done a lot of work on yourself and the food that you eat, and you've figured out what works for you. And as you've said earlier, and then you have to change it every so often. But when you go for your consultations, when you go to see the consultant about your MS, what does he or she say? What do they think about the fact you're not taking any medication?
You know, they're so lovely. I have a beautiful relationship with my doctor, and he's more of a family than anything else, you know, because every single time, I think he's gotten to know me so much that he's very, very reluctant to ever tell me that, you know, you should take something. If at all, at most, he'd be like, you know, Karan, why don't you maybe, do you want to try folic acid? I'm just like, yeah, but why? He said, because, you know, you've been traveling, maybe you're a little bit jet lagged. I'm just like, doc, but I'll just eat better, you know? So, you know, so I think a lot of us, we will sort of associate, but every single 6 months I do get tested. And, you know, every 6 months he will tell me something different. This last 6 months he did call my mother and father in, and, you know, he gave him some good news saying that, you know, whatever he's doing, let him keep doing. So I think he's very, very, you know, hesitant to ever tell me to take an omega 3, 6 or 9 because I'm also kind of allergic to fish. And in most omega 3, 6 and 9, they contain salmon oil. So when I did take it about 10 years ago, I just inflamed up, you know? I my tongue got heavy. I used to get headaches. My skin got rashy, you know, so that fat does not work for me.
So you mentioned there the inflammation, and we talk about this a lot and we're aware of this. So the body's inflammation, it could lead to disease. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, we talk about alkalining or acidic foods, and you're saying the body's already alkaline. But, you know, somebody's texting here saying about the AIP diet and what you think of it. And this is all about sort of anti-inflammatory. You know, it's about sort of if you've got an autoimmune disease, you might follow this. So the sorts of things you would eat on an AIP diet would be lots of fruits and vegetables, coconut oil, a bone broth, those kind of things. I guess that's erring towards the sort of paleo type diet as well. You maybe would be watching the quality of your meat that you're eating, possibly making sure it's organic and of good quality. So what do you think about those kinds of things?
It all makes logical sense, you know, in some aspect. Now, I did try, you know, having bone broth soup. Coconut oil, I don't digest it really all that well. And I think, like you mentioned as well, everyone has got such a unique own passcode to his metabolism. Now, because I have MS, right, one thing which has been told that I should have never had, which is a very large portion of my diet, is yogurt. I should not have it. Yogurt is one of the protein choices that I actually have, and that helps with my inflammation to my metabolism.
In good way.
In an absolute great way.
But do you take any other dairy?
No. I mean, you know, when I'm making mashed potatoes and maybe I'm using like a splash of real milk, you know.
And butter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's great. It's working for you.
Oh,
and they're good
sure.
ingredients.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You know, like if I'm making like, you know, rice, then I'm probably going to make butter rice, you know, just to make sure that it also digests a little bit better. If, like I said, when I'm eating bread, I'm probably using peanut butter. You know, so there are things which I've been told that, you know, that causes inflammation, but I think that's one of the things that has to be identified from person to person.
And how you identify that. So you've mentioned digestion so many times. So listening in, tuning into your body on how you're digesting your foods. And if they're digesting well, keep with them until it might change, but keep with it. So things like if it's not digesting well, you might be bloated, you might be constipated, you might get like an acidic sort of heartburn, something like that. They might all be signs that you're not digesting that particular food,
you know,
very well.
Because I deal with so many variety of people for diets, so a woman and a man have two completely different metabolisms, right? The only reason is because a woman's hormone is a lot more sensitive than a man, which means that you will hold either stress a lot faster and a lot quicker. So that's why weight sometimes for women bounces from morning, afternoon, and evening. You will also know right away if a food does not digest with you. A man would take 48 hours until we find out that, oh my God, I'm feeling, you know, I feel a little bit heavy today. What's wrong? That's because 48 hours ago, we probably ate something that did not work. It is important to understand someone's body. And for me, I started identifying with, am I constipated? Do I have a migraine? Do I feel sluggish? Am I sleeping well? Am I sleeping too much? Do I have energy? You know, am I getting itchy on any part of my body, even something so small and minute as even my neck? You know, so you're almost like self-diagnosing yourself, saying that, oh my God, you know, I just had this and I kind of feel like this now. You know, I get an itchy tongue and that's not a good feeling, you know?
Lots to consider, but actually if you get into the habit of it, it becomes just second nature to know, and but you're connected, so much connected to your food. Jisan's asking lots of questions, but a few here. I'm currently on a slightly modified keto diet with oats in the morning and high carbs day, brown rice. I'm very active. I lift 5 times a week. Do you have any suggestions on making this any better? Do you agree, or do you think the keto diet is effective?
I actually like keto. I think keto actually has some place. Now, the only thing I would really suggest to you is, you know, look and also understand that we've been told brown rice, white rice, you know, stick to something which is clean. White is clean. Eat it. It's better. Calorie-wise, one cup of brown rice is 180 calories. One cup of white rice is 110. So if calorie is still king, pick things which also digest better. Now, going into ketosis, like a real ketogenic diet, actually restricts your carbohydrates. So I don't know what type of keto he's really doing.
Okay, you need to be aware about
that. Right, because I've not heard anyone in a ketogenic diet having more than 40 to 50 grams of carbs in a day.
So brown rice here, 200 to 300 grams is what he's saying. Mm. Yeah. So that's, you know, interesting because you always think brown rice is better than white rice. But again, in combination with what else you're eating.
Sure. It's also that 1 gram of fiber difference. You know, that 1 gram of fiber difference is not going to do anything to your body.
So, where are you at today? Busy with all your clients?
Yeah.
What are you working on? What are you working towards?
You know, the good thing is that most of my clients, I sort of encourage all of them. I'm big into people going out to eat, you know? And because I love what I do, I've enjoyed it for the last 15 years being in this space. I don't like people carrying around Tupperwares. I don't think it's livable. I don't think it's sustainable. It's not fun. It'll just cause depression, you know, because then you'll always feel as though you're on a diet. My clients are a lot of fun, you know, so I enjoy sort of helping them and guiding them and researching when I need to research. You know, I do spend very, very active with the ADA and understand that what is the new in nutrition which is coming on. You know, I love grocery shopping because I'm a foodie. I like looking at ingredients. I like looking at products. And if I see something which is sort of catchy, I will probably tell on my clients, they're like, you know, you should go try this or go try this restaurant, have this. I like desserts. I'm a big fan of sweets, you know, and so for me, and most of my clients, if you ask them what do they eat around 3 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll give them like 3-4 different options. And one of them would be sure fruit because I'm in nutrition, so maybe that should be one of them. In actuality, do I eat a lot of fruits? I don't, but I eat a lot of chocolate and so do they.
And interesting. Well, you're going to get a lot of take up then if that's what you're advocating.
Yeah, please.
It's been a real pleasure talking with you today.
Thank you. Likewise. Thank you very much.
Come back and see us again. Karan Soni, check him out online. We've posted up all his details on our blog today at dubaieye1038.com/Dubai Today. And to listen to the show again in full, you can pick up the podcast as well there. For now, Karan, thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you.